Albuquerque.
And
in Mexico.
And when was that?
April 20th, 1926.
Okay. And where did you grow up and go to school?
In Las Cruces.
And were your parents farmers?
My father farmed a little bit. He was an engineer, had been in the Army and wounded several times in World War II. But World War I did. He kind of caught polio and died here and went in Beaumont and El Paso. But he bought the farm and started it. But he figured that anybody could farm if they just learned the trade.
And what was your father's name?
Roy Tomlin.
And where was he from originally?
He was from Missouri originally. He came west as a young man, either to fight for or against Pancho Villa. He ended up joining the Army at Fort Bliss.
Interesting.
And he was a champion boxer at Fort Bliss, held the title for a number of years while he was there. Then they went to Scotland. They were sent there to get ready to go over to the Germans, which they did, but the poison gas hurt him.
I see.
So he left us, and I was about 2.5 years old. My mother was educated in Missouri. She taught and was a principal and superintendent in Missouri and in Missouri University, and then she went to Colorado University. And then when my father died, she said, well, I'll run the farm, and which she did, and did a better job than we've done in the field at times.
I believe you mentioned that she had used prisoners of war.
Yes, she used Italian prisoners of war.
Laborers.
Well, first, most of the labor came out of the Arkansas and Oklahoma, and they'd come in and pick the cotton and stay over some of them and do a little of field work. But we didn't have any influx of Mexicans coming from Mexico at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I still wonder why there wasn't a push then to come over. But then we worked the Italian prisoners, and then they worked German prisoners. And about that time, I joined the Army, and I became a combat infantry sergeant and fought in Europe at the end of the Battle of Bulge in that time. And then I didn't have enough points as he had to have to come home, so they trained me to be a military policeman. And about that time, they were going to ship me to Tokyo for the invasion. And thank God the atomic bomb came, or I probably wouldn't be here today. But I still stayed in Europe till I got enough points to come home. And then I went to New Mexico State when I got home. And then the next year, I started running the farm as I went to school. And I farmed it ever since. That was about 1947.
Okay. And when did your parents buy this place?
They bought it in 1926.
Okay. So they've had it for about 20 years or so at the time that you started farming. So you have always farmed then since you got out of the service, is that correct?
Well, I taught school for 5 years for New Mexico State with veterans, and then I went back and got my master's degree. And after I got through with that, I got a chance to lease a big farm. So I farmed the big farm, and then I thought, well, I better go back and get my master's. And so I did, and as I said before. And so then I was able to raise our children, send them all through college, and two sons and a daughter went to New Mexico State and got their degrees.
Okay, and what were your degrees then, Mr. Tomlin?
Bachelor of Science of Agriculture, Soils, and Ag Education, had a double major. And then I got my master's in Educational Administration, and had a minor in Psychology and Ag Education.
Okay.
And then after that, I was encouraged to get in the legislature, so I became a state representative. Served in that capacity for 10 years.
Do you mind if I ask if you're a Republican or a Democrat?
I'm a Democrat,
okay.
But really, I was always taught to respect both sides of the aisle. And in politics, you have to have votes on both sides. So I held a track record. I think I passed over 108 bills into law. They used to carry all the governor bills, or four different governors. Which is a track record. It didn't do much good because New Mexico will not pay a salary to a legislator.
Okay, so you said that you began farming here then in 1947, is that correct?
Yes, that's when I took over actually and did work, and it was rented before that.
Okay, I believe that the Bracero project, program would have been in effect then since about 1942. Did you?
I have no evidence or knowledge of them being that early. It might have been in Texas or other areas, but that we didn't even know what wetbacks were till after World War II. You had a lot of them come over, and I know. I was supposed to go to El Paso and study President Truman's gestures. He had the most world record handling of his gestures as he talked. So I was in a speech class, so I went down there, and we had a cotton crop to get out, and we couldn't get anybody to come and pick the cotton. So we had one of our senators got on the train at Deming, the Truman train, and told him we got to do something. So the first thing that the president said when he got talked to us in El Paso at the station was, this opened the borders to get this cotton crop out, which they did. And the Mexicans came over and picked the cotton and helped everybody out.
And that was what year?
That would be in 48, I believe.
48, okay. And that was your first experience using Mexican nationals as farmers?
Well, I'd grown up with Mexicans. The only trouble I had when I was little, I learned Spanish, and then they would want to whip me at school because I spoke language. That was a no-no, which should have been the other way around. But they were always around. We had lots of sheep at one time, and we had kind of migrant ones that liked to come and work with the sheep. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of people in Mexico, they're kind of like Germans. They're specialists. And if you get them to do what they really like and they're trained for, you get real perfection. It'll work.
Mm-hmm. At the time that you began using Mexican nationals or braceros, how many acres were you farming?
Oh, we were only farming about 50 acres.
Okay.
But people could make a living on it at that time like that. Whereas today you farm, say, 2,000 acres and you can't make as much profit as you did then.
So that would have been in the late 1940s?
Yeah.
Okay, and what were you raising at that time?
We raised alfalfa and cotton mainly.
Okay. And what about later on? Did you change your crops at all? Or?
Oh, we tried everything from sweet potatoes in 1950, I think, and onions, but then we kind of got out of it, and then we went back into it more intensely, and today we're probably... main highlight of our operation is onions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We grow about every crop. We even tested the soybeans here, but they don't grow good here because we have an iron deficiency in the soil, and they turn yellow, and then when they're ready to harvest, the hull explodes in the air, and you can't combine them good.
Interesting.
Someday they can get us a variety that'll fit, that'll work.
Okay, so your first experience, when you first heard about the Bracero program, that was on your train trip that you mentioned?
No, it came afterward. I think the president, to me, helped get it set up, because there was a lot of criticism that these people might want to stay, and they didn't want them to stay, and we never had that problem. They all wanted to get home as quick as they could.
Okay, and this was mostly post-World War II then.
Is what?
Post-World War II.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me why you decided to employ braceros?
There was no other choice. There was no other labor.
And why was that?
I guess a lot of those people I mentioned, like from Oklahoma, they were nice people, and they'd come every year, and they quit coming. They all got into defense plants in World War II in California, most all of them. And they really got ahead. So it left a void there that had to be filled somewhere. And Mexican nationals were very noted for doing whatever they were told to do. There was no feeling of I'm in the wrong area or something like that of employment.
What did you have to do to hire braceros?
Well, we went through Farm Bureau here. There was other labor associations, and they set up a deal where they would get insurance. You had to have them insured. You had a criteria to follow from the federal government. It was very stringent in their housing and all that. And then if you qualified, it cost anywhere from $25 to $50 a man. It wasn't cheap. It was pretty expensive. And the contract had to be renewed, I don't know, every 6 months or something, 3 months.
So that was just what it cost to hire
to get the permit, to get the permit. And then when you got him on board, you had to go get them. We got them. In one case, we had to go and pay a general in Juarez officer, a high Mexican officer, to allow them to come in. And we would go over and see him and give him a little bit of a token to do that work, and then they'd have them on ready for the bus and the number for your account the next day.
Would that be something in the nature of an unofficial payment?
No, it was official
it
payment.
Was official.
Yeah, it was to clarify the fact that those people were coming over here.
I see.
So they could know where their presence was.
Okay, and did you actually then have to go down and select the people that you wanted, or did you have a choice in that?
If you knew them as it went on, you could go and pick them or call them in Mexico and have them, or write them a letter and have them come through. Your problem was that they could come through so easy, they didn't want to follow the routine of coming in legally. And they'd be waiting to see at the Coliseum in El Paso for you, and I said, oh, go back, you've got to come in the right way.
Uh-huh.
And then you would get them. The other problem, some of them would get homesick or didn't like it, and they want to go home right away once you started to got them to work.
Uh-huh.
You could always tell when they're about ready to leave you, and that is they would start buying clothes to take home, and they always liked these blue suitcases, kind of like a little trunk. And when you saw them getting them, and you knew you weren't going to have them around long. They usually would like to quit you on Sunday morning. That meant that we had to pay them on a Saturday at noon. And the one thing strange was they didn't like to work Saturday afternoons or Sundays, unless it was irrigation and necessity. But it was quite an interesting thing to watch them get the blue suitcases and preparing for leaving. And they usually would all leave. You'd lose, say, if you had 15 or 10, they'd all leave at one time there. They're strange that way. That's one of the things you have with them. They like to work in a group and stay in a group.
Hmm.
We used to kid some couldn't eat unless they had somebody with them, you know.
So can you tell me what the government regulations were that you had to follow in order to use bracero labor?
Well, as I recall, I could be skipping something. The main thing was insurance. And clean housing. You had to furnish bedding, utensils, a place for them to cook their food. They were noted for, say, buying food and chopping it up. Like a tomato, they'd chop it up. They wouldn't buy a canned tomato at all or anything like that, or frozen foods. They liked to chop up the commodity and prepare it right there. They did most of their cooking at night for the next day. And you had to have heat in the house. And one problem the government didn't understand is why we didn't have enough heat. But you get 30 men in a big house, it heats up pretty quick, especially with all that cooking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what time of the year would you usually get them, and how long would they stay?
Well, you'd usually get them late springtime, say about May, and start getting them, because you had to more or less provide them with work to meet your obligation of your contract with the government to get them through. So you'd get them when their weeds would begin to grow, And then in the fall, we try to get them in about the 20th of September to hand pick cotton. One advantage when they hand picked it, you got so much better quality. The machines tend to get leaves and bark and things in the cotton lint. The new machines are pretty well sophisticated and you don't have that problem, but we had no machines then. There were a few that had come out in 1948. People bought them, and I think they bought them mainly to try to scare the workers to pick and say, well, you don't work, but put the machine in the field. But they weren't that efficient like the man. The only thing you had to hand weigh ever, you had to weigh every sack of cotton that's picked and pay them accordingly. And you had to be watch out that they didn't try to get to you, have a rock sewed in the sack or something like that, because they're mischievous, just like a bunch of young adolescent boys, really. But you have to watch that. And then the best policy was to pick one of them and make him responsible for the crew. And they'd respect him more than would anybody else you could put in, or put your wife or daughter. They like women to wait on them. They really were very courteous to the women. And that way then they saw that the job was done right.
This is probably backtracking a little bit. What kind of paperwork did you have to go through in order to hire these guys?
Well, the main thing they wanted was the money, so that they could assure that you were could take care of them. If you can afford the, we'll say $50 per man, that you couldn't get them. And then they would give them a card to come over, or they'd be issued a card. But the cost was pretty high, really, for what you got, because they could leave you any time and you couldn't get your money back. Mm-hmm. It made it bad. Now, you probably wonder, how did we know how to select good men that are unknown? That's the question. And main thing, you turn your hands up and look at the palms of the hands of the workers. And you can tell whether their workers are out of the city and never touched work. And we've seen them even go out and rub their hands on railroad tracks down by El Paso to get them looking weathered a little bit to get the job. And we had some men that, we had one called Apodaca. It was here, we hired him, and he could just pick you the best man in the world. I can't refer him to you because he died here a while back. He sure knew how to select good men.
Apodaca, was that?
Yeah.
Or uh-huh. Yes. Okay. So he was the the labor contractor?
He worked with the Farm Bureau, and then he split off and started one of his own down by Anthony.
I see. Okay. And it was the Doniana County Farm
Bureau.
Uh-huh. Okay, that administered the program. Okay. How many years would you say you employed braceros?
Let's see, what was the ending date? 64 or something?
64, yeah.
Yes, we had them all that time. In fact, being an officer in Farm Bureau, the government got real hostile with us, and so it all went to court. And the chairman of Farm Bureau was in India on the exchange program, so I had to take his place, and we had to go to federal court in Albuquerque, and they threw us out, said we weren't supposed to be there. And that gave us grounds in to go to Washington. And we took our lawyers from here, and they weren't allowed to testify because they weren't from there, didn't have licenses to practice law in Washington. So it was very expensive. It took about a week, and one of the stalls that we had the men around, and the program was ending. They didn't want any more. They didn't like the way we ran them or something. I think it was red tape. But we gave us a chance, the farmers here and everywhere, to start legalizing the best ones to keep. And that way we all did it, and it made a real good thing for the farmers and ranchers.
And would you say that was at the end of the bracero program?
That was the end of it.
Okay.
Now, you wonder, why did it end? They wanted more fringe benefits for them. They wanted 12-foot ceilings, we'll say, in the houses. They were just unrealistic requirements the government put in. It all started with some purple letter or something from the president. I don't know what it was, either Eisenhower or Kennedy. But anyway, nobody ever wanted to fool with labor. Even National Farm Bureau, we won't touch labor. So that's why we were on our own, more or less, with this area, trying to get the thing resolved. And there's a lot of ramifications. I don't know. Mr. Porter should know a lot of that. I don't know if you've got a chance to talk to him. But he later became the head of State Farm Bureau.
Actually, I did talk to Mr. Porter, but we didn't talk about a lawsuit. I will have to give him a call and see if he wants to add to his interview. But so you think that...
The one that went with me from here on that was Mr. Carl Fabian, and he later was county chairman. But there's not too many around that were involved in it.
And I have a call into him. I have not interviewed him yet, but maybe I will be able to do that in the future.
Now, I had a problem in Washington. They didn't want me to testify because I rented land. They said that's a no-no. I said, we all rent land. You can't afford to own a lot of land. There's no way.
So they were...
Yeah, they were... When we knew we'd lose the case because the... Judge had lunch every day with Secretary of Labor. But labor is something that you have to really follow the rules. I know I've been on the state committee of the U.S. government, and you have to take all this civil rights training and all that, and it's quite an ordeal. It mainly is to protect the worker. And the same thing here, they just wanted more protection for them. Which
and you
is
think
all right.
That was basically the cause of the program ending.
Well, I think it got too expensive, and you had mechanicization came in, and that way you could put that best person that you were contracting, that you had sponsored, you could put him on that cotton picker to drive it, and then you do take the place of 30 men.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas today our picker probably take care of 300 people. They're more efficient and bigger.
Okay.
There was something else there that you get into the ramification of these workers. You couldn't get rid of a bad one unless you just took him in, and then they would you'd lose your money. You'd never come out. Now, there were some freeloaders of the Mexicans, of course, that came in where you had such a wonderful medical insurance to pay for any operation or cold or anything like that. And they tended to, some of them, ride that to their glory. We had one, and they said he was a professional baseball player from New Mexico City. And the first thing we knew, he had said he jabbed his eye with a cotton stalk picking cotton. The eye surgeon went ahead and did the work with thousands of dollars, but corrected him, but he didn't stay long after he was corrected. But I had one time, and his eyes had a red growth over them. And they were able, the doctors took care of him. We thought, we'll lose him too, but he's still around.
Hmm.
What I should mention is, how did you get these legalized halfway? And that was, you had to sponsor him as a grower. You can do it in any industry, but in sponsoring a worker, you have to more or less guarantee him a job, guarantee they won't be a freeloader to society, and see that they have housing and can get along. In one case, I know we legalized one family, and he had about 13 kids, and we had to get for all of them. Today, most of these kids are body shop workers or some strange work, and they do good work here in El Paso. And it shows how, if you have a fairly high IQ, which these people had, that we couldn't find locally, that was one of the reasons for success. The other thing, in health-wise, I don't mention, you had to have showers for them, and they got to where they knew that they needed to keep very clean. And that was very good because it kept down any problems on their health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened today, you can't sponsor them like you used to could that I know of. Their own families sponsor them, which is not a very good rule because they get old Uncle So-and-so and their fathers. A lot of them are very, they're not healthy wise to really do much work. But the law allows them to bring their families in. Now, the work crews today are all mostly from Mexico and come in daily. They all have green cards. Somewhere they've gotten sponsored somewhere from a relative or a past employer or something. And that's where we get our crews. And they're pretty good, pretty efficient crews.
So when you say halfway naturalized.
That means you aren't can't vote. You just started the procedure. And to finish it, you've got to learn some things to pass the test for clearance for citizenship.
Okay.
But the first step isn't hard.
So the first step, you would say, is getting the green card.
It's just like, say, you had a babe that's real good. And you find out that she likes the country. Well, you could go down and sponsor her. But you would have to agree that you would see that she lives a healthful life and that she has insurance and that she has a good steady job with you all along.
Okay. So would you say that you used braceros then from like 1948 to 1964? Let's kind of backtrack a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
1948 to 1964.
Well, actually, we used them longer than that because the ones that were legalized stayed.
Except that then they would not have been.
There's still a few around.
Braceros anymore. Okay.
Now I've got a couple of men working for me now that were sponsored by other farmers. They're no longer around.
How many braceros do you think you employed over the years?
Mm.
You said, 18 to 20 a year?
We ended up with about 30 crew. Of course, that was just for cotton picking. And you had your regular ones that stayed year-round, you'd probably work about 4 to 6.
4 to 6 year-round?
Uh-huh.
And what would you have the 4 to 6 do on a year-round?
Oh, they drove tractors and irrigated. That was the hard thing, get people to irrigate. And one thing I'll say for these people, they can stay with a head of water for 100 hours if necessary, and they know how to sleep and time their water and not make cause any problems, which is a skill. It looks like the laziest man's the best irrigator. Well, not so, because he's got it under control. He times it and knows when to stop and start in different sections of the farm.
But it was hard to get people who had that skill.
Yeah.
Okay. What was the usual length of a work contract?
I just don't know particularly now. I know they had to be renewed every so on. So we sometimes would just take them down to get them renewed. And I got, well, it was interesting, but one time we had one who was the most, and he really was a good worker. He'd even milk the cow for you, and he kept everything perfect. Well, his contract came up to be renewed, so I told Mother, can you do it? I was doing some other work, and she took him down to immigration, all come around, and she said, what's wrong? Says, you've got a fugitive here. He's a murderer. He's no good. She says, well, he's the best man we've ever had. And she felt very sorry for him when they let him off, that maybe he'd been victimized. You never know.
My
mother.
Uh-huh. Your mother, okay.
Yeah, she loved to work them because she never had any problems with them.
Okay. And what was your mother's name?
Sally. S-A-L-L-I-E.
Okay.
Yeah, she's one of the first women farmers, I guess you'd say.
So she went down and dealt with the authorities then?
Uh-huh. You'd have to sometimes take them in to get them renewed. They'd have to look at them.
Okay. Well, if you were hiring someone, say for example, for picking cotton, how long did the cotton picking season last?
It lasted till 1st of December, from September to
September through December.
Uh-huh.
So would that be typically the period of time that those people would work?
Yeah.
Okay. And then the other guys, you said you had 4 to 6 year rental.
Now, sometimes they would come in and work wet. And the only thing, if they were wet back, that just meant they didn't have papers. And they would work really better when they were wet than when they're legalized, because they knew they had to get that money to send back their families and all that. But they always, I know one time the immigration came to the mother and says, "We got to take this guy." And she says, "Well, can you let him finish irrigating? We've got to get through." And they did. They were very cooperative. And I know one time one of them asked me, "Will he run away?" And I said, "No, he won't run away. When he gives me his word, he's good."
Was that the immigration service?
Yeah, felt sorry for them. But immigration were always looking around for them. Today, it's changed, I understand, that we never see a wetback on the farm anymore that we know is wet.
Mm-hmm.
And if they catch them with one in your car, then more or less immigration take your car. We had one that's wife. Hauled her brother over up here, and they caught him, and they took his car, and he had a time getting the car back. So the rules are pretty harsh, whereas if some real aristocrat has no problem coming in.
But, well, yeah. Okay, for example, then, during the cotton picking season, say you had 30 braceros that you had hired mm-hmm. to pick cotton. Is that all they did, or did some of them have other jobs?
No, that was all they did.
That was all they did.
It was just a steady go there till you got through.
Okay, and the ones that were here year-round, then they did things like drive tractors and irrigate.
General work.
Okay. How did the braceros get from Mexico to your place?
They came in buses. They'd usually load at the Coliseum or at the border. But mainly the Coliseum was a terminal, and they would, say, send 50 or 100 a day up to Las Cruces, and they usually come in the evening, and then they're assigned to you. You'd go in your truck and say, "I've got 5 or 30 or whatever," and they would count them out to you, and then you'd have to take them. The first thing you had to do was take them to get food. So these little grocery stores all around the valley, wherever the farmer lived, close to, would take them there, and those stores did a good business. You'd set it up and give them credit and then take it out of their wages in the next week or two, but they always first had to get their groceries. And then you'd take them and put them in their housing.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the Coliseum in El Paso, was that part of the university?
Just like it is today. They just used the facility, in fact, go inside, we did it outside there, of the Coliseum.
Okay, well, I'm trying to figure out what building that is exactly. I'm not sure.
I don't know. There wasn't any building to it. We were just in the yard parking lot where they set it up and let us go and get them.
Was that like a baseball?
It was just like a big transient area. And it was just a matter of sending the buses to different locations.
Was that downtown, or where was
at the Coliseum in El Paso.
The Coliseum. So
mm-hmm.
is that
it's
like
still there.
The Sun Bowl, or?
No, it's over there. Let's see, you go down Paisano, and it's the main Coliseum. I don't know whether it's on your right or left. It's where they have the stock show.
Oh, I see. Stock show.
It made a good place to congregate them.
Okay.
The other thing is that you had to do and provide was help send their money back home with money orders.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to go through a registered money order through the post office because of thieving, they would never get to them. But this worked. And that way they got their money home. But it was always on Monday. You spend a lot of hours taking them to the doctor or taking them their money orders to get them sent. We usually just send them for them
mm-hmm.
and bring them back a receipt. But if they send anything in a letter, it never made it.
You mean like cash?
Yeah.
Okay. What about checks?
They wouldn't honor them then.
Huh. Interesting. Okay.
I shouldn't say that they might have honored them in certain places, but if you had real good people in the post office, they helped a lot. We had one guy, and he had such a friendly, good way about him. He ended up being the county clerk, and then a state representative, and then head of a National Guard here. But it was personality that counted.
And what was his name?
His name was Mike Fritz.
Okay. I know of the Fritz family.
Yeah, there's one on this. Let's see. He's on this, I think, City Commission now. But they're good people.
Okay. You mentioned earlier, I kind of got the impression, I guess, that you had gone to one of the Bracero processing centers or reception center. Did you?
Oh, yeah. You had to go personally and get them.
And
sometimes you might get a friend to get them, but it's real dangerous. And your other problem was that, say you had two real good men there, word gets around, and some of these big farmers would try to get them away from you. Mm-hmm. And that's where, like we mentioned, Epi Apodaca ran the other association. He was so good in seeing that you got your men back and that they didn't play favorites and give them just some big rich farmer. But it was kind of an embarrassing situation to make sure that you got your men and that somebody else didn't get them by bribe or some system of popularity.
But that would have been then just in El Paso. Did you ever?
No, here in Las Cruces too.
Okay.
See, they'll bring, say, a busload to Las Cruces, and they'll count them out. Like, you need 10, we'll give you 10. Mm-hmm. And if you knew them, well, they knew they were good, and other people would get around, so you had to watch them.
Who were the big rich farmers around here?
Oh, I guess you always have that. They had big acreage and very wealthy type.
Did you ever actually have to go to, I guess they would call it like a reception center where the braceros were being held before they could come into the country? I think they had one in
That'd be the Coliseum, El Paso.
I'm talking about Eagle Pass.
Yeah, it's farther on down, but we used El Paso.
So you never had to go to?
Well, we had to go through it, but they ran the Department of Labor.
Okay. So basically what you had to do was just go pick them up.
Yeah, you were just more or less their shepherd from then on.
Okay.
And take care of them, see that they, didn't have bad colds or something wrong. But I don't know who gave them the physicals, but they did receive at that center a physical, some description.
Okay. And that would have been there at Eagle Pass.
No, in El Paso. Eagle Pass is a different area.
Oh, okay. So they came in through El Paso.
Mm-hmm.
You're,
some of them.
Rubbing your microphone there. It's kind of got a little static when it does that. You talked a little bit about the housing. Can you describe the housing that you put the braceros in?
Well, you wanted a house with you had to have showers for them.
Uh-huh.
You had to have, they like gas, propane or natural gas burners to cook their food on.
Uh-huh.
You had to furnish all the utensils. And usually you had to have a mattress cover on your mattress. You had to have a comforter and a pillow and a pillowcase. And I think sheet. And I think it was two blankets. But that was federal requirement.
Okay, and was that here on your property?
No.
No.
Oh, we'd have it on some of the lease property, too.
Okay.
A lot of the houses are still, I've got a place I bought, which these Japanese people had, Mr. Cachero, and he built his house for them with big showers, and it helped out a lot. It was fireproof. He used cement block roof, covered with tar and asphalt and gravel, but it made it where they could clean it good. It was just disastrous when they left. They'd steal a lot of times your blankets, utensils, and all that. Unless you tried to, check them in.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to
And then some of them have just suddenly looked towards the south and say, Mama needs me and want to quit.
Okay. So all of the braceros that you hired stayed in a common building?
Yeah, in a house or something. The U.S. Labor would come out and inspect them. So you always worried, what will I qualify? And are they keeping it good once you get them in the house?
Now, was it mostly just the men who came, or did they bring their families?
No, they weren't allowed to families. If you sponsored one, like I said before, you'd have to sponsor the wife and the kids, which we did in several of them. But a lot of them, you never see them again. They work a few months and they're gone once you sponsor them, even then. There's no guarantee they're going to stay with you.
Mentioned earlier that when you brought them over, you had to take them to get their groceries first, and that was set up on credit. Now, did they have to pay for their own groceries?
No, as I said before, we took it out of their check. We advanced them their groceries.
Okay. But it did.
Because they didn't have any money to buy groceries.
Right. But after they had started.
Because I never saw any peso exchanging done here, because the ratios change so fast, you just can't afford to get into it. We'd strictly American dollars, period. And then you'd send the money over and they'd transfer it over there.
Okay, so if it came out of their check, then actually they did pay for it, but it was more set up through.
Yeah, you kept a log book on them. And then you'd pay them according to that. Usually you pay them on Saturday at noon, and they'd go to town and buy their supplies for the next week once you got them started on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had different people. They had Catholics and Protestants that come out at night a lot of times and have services for them.
What did they typically buy at the stores? What did they like to eat?
Well, mainly they'd eat a lot of beans, and they bought lots of white flour and onions, just basic commodities. They love tomatoes, but they buy them always fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And green chili if they could find it, and coffee and tea.
Okay, you started to talk a little bit about the services that were held for them.
Yes, some farmers wouldn't allow them on the place, but we always let them. They wanted to come out and talk to them and let them if they wanted to hear them, they'd hear them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which it was nice on the standpoint of the community of having an interest in them.
So did they ever take off, like on Sundays, to go to church or...
I don't know. I don't think many of them went. You're probably familiar with the Mexican people. The women have the religion, so to speak. They do the going to church. They do all the inner part with religion, with the priest or the minister, whatever it is. The men are very negligent in not going to church, I'd say.
Hmm. Were there any occasions where you allowed them to have time off to celebrate, like, say, a Mexican holiday?
Well, you have to do that. In other words, they're going to, in the May celebration, the September celebrations, you better let them go. Mother's Day is another day that you better let them go.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that working them on holidays like Good Friday is just almost a no-no with the real Mexicans in Mexico. They figure it's bad luck. Maybe it is. But with modern farming like we do, you can't stop. You've got to keep going.
Bad luck to work on Good Friday.
No, it was that was one day the men were supposed to go to Mass.
I see. Okay.
The other thing, if one of them did have a wife in here, or bring a wife in, and some of them married to U.S. citizens, is if a child or one of them is sick, you better drop everything and tend to it, because they'll start walking to town if you don't take them. They get so up-geared. They're so, responsive. They have such a responsive feeling for their family, which is very well I think, noted and should be considered by other people. But like if there one of them dies and the family has a child, the others take care of the child. They don't put it up for adoption. They don't have to. The family takes care of it.
Service or Border Patrol agents come and check on your people, and were they checking to see if you met your requirements?
No, the thing they were after was wetbacks, ones that weren't legal.
Okay.
And that was about all they claimed. And then we ran into that more when we got into chili picking. I forget about what year we started, about 62 were the ones that were left. And they would hide the wetbacks in the chili wagon where they were dumping the chili. And one time, they all got panicky. I just happened to go by, and they had a lot of immigration there checking them out. And what had happened, they had buried one down there, and he quit breathing down under the chili, and they had to dig him out. And luckily, the immigration gave him respiration or some treatment and got him out of it. But it was a kind of something you don't forget.
I guess.
But really, there was respect both ways. We had good immigration people, I have to say.
Okay.
As far as drugs, I don't think I ever had any of the Viceros on drugs at all. Whereas today, you can't say that. These crews we get to harvest cabbie, say, it made my son feel bad one time. He saw one shooting himself up for heroin. And they said, what are you doing that for? Oh, my work better. And it made it kind of bad. But they were, I'd say I never saw any of them use drugs. They used lots of their Mexican cigarettes that smelled pretty bad. They were still dried out, but they liked them.
Was that tobacco cigarettes or funny cigarettes?
they were, you know, they have two types. One's a high price, one's like ours, and then they have a cheapie. Cigarette, and the cheapie is what they liked, more potent.
Is that those ovalados? Is
something
that what they
like
call
that.
Them? Yeah, they're kind of flattened out.
Yeah.
And they have sugar in the paper or something like that.
A lot of them don't smoke, though.
I see.
The worst problem that the Spanish people have, Mexican people, is diabetes. It's just terrible. I know I got one time in the hospital, they took off 18 legs in one day down here. It's just kind of hereditary, and we have our shop foreman right now. He got sick a couple of weeks ago, and they got him straightened out. His sugar content had just got too high. But that's one thing. Tuberculosis is pretty high on the ones now where they gave ours physicals, but they can tell by looking at their fingernails whether you got tuberculosis. It's usually real flat and thick if you have it. Well, the problem with those wetbacks, they go and work in the dairies, and they'll give the TB to the cow. Then you can't cure the cow, you got to destroy her.
Huh.
And that's happened down there in El Paso County right now.
I didn't know that.
And I have a real good friend, immigration officer. He's retired, and he's named Payne. And he was always kidding me about it. He just take him to the hospital when he'd pick him up and make sure that they did or didn't have TB.
So you mentioned something about insurance. Was that health insurance primarily that you were paying for the Brazil?
It was health and life in case they got killed on the spot or something like
that. I see. Okay.
Kind of similar to our workman's comp. That was another thing. It was getting so high, and you can understand that. Say we insure you for $20, and the first time you go to the doctor, it's more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to balance insurance. You see that in the government today. It's, how can you do that, or even an insurance company? And with a farm, you get five claims, you're through, and you got to find another company.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's today. What was it like during the Bracero program?
Well, we had very good cooperation with the medical doctors, and we had a good insurance, but I say it was starting to get too high. Because they want to go to the doctor if they get feeling they have a cold.
And that would have been during the Bracero program. Okay. Do you happen to remember what you were paying them?
No, I was trying to think of that last night again. I know we didn't pay them near what we pay today. And the you didn't have that workman's deal we have now with unemployment, where every quarter you pay a fund to the state, no matter what state you're in, for your workers. And then if they have become a charge, can't get work, well, they draw out of that fund. And if they draw too much, well, your fund, you'd have to almost pay them direct. But the state's sharing that too, but gives them some protection. Of course, they've got to apply for work, you know, and try to find another job.
But you're saying that is in effect today, and it was
not. Yeah, and that's something you can't buy insurance to protect yourself as a grower.
Okay. Do you happen to remember how wages were determined at the time that program was in effect?
It was all with the U.S. Department of Labor. I can't remember. I know the cotton picking, it was high. I think, as I recall, it was $2 a hundred to pick the upland and $4 for Pima, the extra long stick, which is pretty high.
Per 100 pounds?
Yeah.
Okay.
The labor, I don't know what it's $1.50 an hour or $3.50, I just can't remember. I don't know where all. We had a big fire a few years ago, burned up our offices and all our records.
Okay. But you did keep track of what you paid each worker?
You had to really keep track of that, and mainly just like IRS, you know, you've got to account with them more, I guess, than anything else, that labor.
And how did you do that? Did you use like a ledger book?
We had a little book, and it had their two copies in it, one for you and one for them. And you have them sign it that was correct.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the rule, if it's not, come back as soon as you can, we'll correct it. There's one thing, they're very good on that, on accountability. And if you underpay one, you get in trouble quick. In other words, if he says you owe him another hour or 2 hours, it's better just to pay him that than to try to say he's not entitled to it. You hurt his feelings and all that. You want him to feel that you're his beloved boss or patron. The other thing I might mention, when you went to get the men, and I learned it almost too late, they want you dressed good. And they say, look at my patron over there, the guy with the good brand new clothes on and all that. That's my boss.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember that they take pride in their boss, which you don't find so much of that today.
That's interesting. I've never heard that one before. Were you required to withhold any taxes or anything from their pay?
I don't think they were under Social Security. Could have been, I think.
I wouldn't think so.
I don't think so.
Wages were going home.
I know they didn't have to pay any of their fees to come in or be recontracted.
Okay, but you probably would have taken.
Now, once they became naturalized, we'll say halfway, you have to pay them.
I see. But you would have taken their costs for their groceries out of their.
Yeah,
tax.
Usually you never worried about that except the first time. And if he quit and ran away, you'd get stuck with it.
Okay.
It helped Mexico a lot because they sent practically every bit of the money back.
Well, we talked about the fact that the Farm Bureau here administered the program. Were there any other local agricultural organizations that you belong to that had influence over the operation of the Bracero program?
No, our main one's always been Farm Bureau. Now, it was just some kind of farmers group started, the one down at Marino and Anthony area with this Ely Gutierrez. And I don't know, it was over some little squabble in the leadership that wouldn't affect the farmer.
What was the name again?
Ely Gutierrez, I think. Is it Ely? No. No, it wasn't either. I can't. You had an Apodaca name. It was probably him. But anyway, we didn't pay any much attention. Now, when we went to trial in Washington on trying to defend ourselves and being able to use them right, meet all the criteria, they went. That group was there, too, and testified.
And that would have been like a group to represent the Braceros?
No, we represented ourselves, a right to use the Bracero. See, the government said we didn't have any right to use them, but we treated them bad, we didn't furnish this and that, which wasn't true at all.
But the group from down south that you mentioned, Eli Gutierrez or whatever?
I don't think it's Eli. I'm mixed up there. It'd be Eli. Let's see, what was that Apodaca you had?
Epifacio Apodaca.
That'd be it.
Okay. And what was his
group? He was a college graduate. We went to school together, and he was a real fine man, but he sure knew how to select good people. Because you've got thousands standing around there on Mexico, and you have to pick some. You know, how are you going to do it? Get somebody that will do the job properly for the farmer or the rancher. Now, occasionally you get cowboys. I had one, the best cowboy I ever saw. And he could just throw any kind of rope. And the first time he had him caught. And then he got his wife over here from Juarez, and they were a nice family. They were so nice, we didn't even have them come in to eat with us and everything else. They're just really a good family. I don't know whatever happened to them.
But the group that you mentioned down south of the farmers that Mr. Apodaca was...
it was a different labor association, we'll say.
But it was a labor association.
But in other words, we had two in the county at the time.
Okay.
Which probably makes it better, you know. Since people get mad at, say, Farm Bureau, they can go there. Or they got mad there, they could come to us in Farm Bureau.
So maybe it wasn't the Farm Bureau. It was some...
No, it wasn't Farm Bureau. It was just a farmer's group.
A farmer's group. Okay. I think we already talked a little bit about the work that your braceros did. Did you have other crops that you hired braceros to harvest besides cotton?
Some people did. They worked them in vegetables, lettuce, and onions. That's about the only vegetable. Then some of the dairies probably hired them, contracted them.
But you personally were just growing cotton at the time?
Cotton and alfalfa.
Alfalfa, okay. So did you have them baling hay and that sort of thing?
No, we usually always had to do that ourselves. Now, after that, some of them were naturalized, and I got two men that had been naturalized, and they could bale hay good and knew how to take care of their machinery.
Can you tell me what a typical work day would be like for one of your braceros during the growing season and then during the harvesting season?
Well, usually always, it's still the same thing today. They want to work from 7 to 5. And we always, with our workers, we didn't knock out the noon hour.
Mm-hmm.
We give them that. They felt you give them a little advantage there. They like you a little better. Of course, now when you're picking cotton, it's a different ball game. Because they work paid by piecework,
mm-hmm.
so much a pound, and that made it different. But some of them can make a lot of money. I had one, I was trying to find his picture. He was a champion cotton picker. He could pick more cotton than I've ever seen in my life, and every time you looked at him, he was doing nothing. He just reached down and picked like magic and then straightened up and rub his back and get with it. Well, he was a real good cement man, too. He said, put cement in this floor, and he'd be perfectly level just with his eyes. He just knew how to look and see it.
Hmm.
He went to California. He come back with a new wife, caught perfect English, and I think today he's on welfare, but I don't know.
Do you happen to remember his name?
Well, I can't think of his name. I'll think of it eventually.
Okay, we can go back to that.
We never really got too personal with our workers.
I
don't think a good employer should.
What kind of tools did they use when they were working for you?
I thought the man's name is Pablo Sáenz.
Pablo Sáenz.
S-A-N-E-Z or something like that. What was your question again?
I was asking about what kind of tools they used to do their work for you.
Well, you usually always give each one a brand new hoe if he's hoeing. And he want a brand new cotton sack. They don't want any secondhand stuff from somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their pride to have their tools. And you give them a shovel, their irrigator. So it meant you had to have quite a bit of supplies there. They weren't too bad at stealing. Today, the workers are so bad about stealing. We have a big onion shed, and there's something being stolen all the time, night and day. Or you'll see a guy come in, what do you want? I'm looking for Joe Brown. Well, we don't have a Joe Brown. Well, it's a cop-out to get in there and steal. And it, they'll steal anything because they go to and take it to flea market. This area's flea market today is damming mainly. They go over there with your chains and your chainsaws and anything that'll sell. Used to be they would never steal anything you work with. Today it's the other way around.
Interesting. Did you ever have to provide them with gloves or hats or anything like that?
Well, you supply boots to irrigate, rubber boots.
Okay.
No, they didn't. We didn't have to furnish gloves. In fact, a lot of them won't wear gloves except welding, and we didn't have any viseros. We've got some workers now. Mexicans are professional mechanics and welders.
So we already talked a little bit about some of the other work that you had braceros do.
They helped build some of the houses to live in. Some are real good in construction.
Uh-huh.
Like I mentioned, they can lay cement floor and not even have to have a level, and magnificent that they can do.
And those were braceros that worked for you?
Yeah.
Okay. And where do they build those houses?
Oh, on different places that we had rented.
I see.
In cooperation with landlords.
Did you have them drive tractors or trucks or anything like that?
No trucks or anything, because a lot of them didn't have licenses to do that.
I see.
They drove the tractors, though, and you don't have to have a license for a tractor.
Okay. Did they operate any other agricultural machines?
Not at that time.
Okay. How much contact did you have with your braceros?
What kind of personal contact?
Well, just, you know, either giving them instructions for what to do for the day, or, you know.
Well, you tend to stay, one of us tend to stay around them all the time. Because it's like any worker, the boss leaves, well, they won't work. So you have to be seen around and have an interest in it. Kind of like the Army. You don't want him to do a job you can't do.
Right.
And they respect you more. They know you can do the job they're doing.
Okay, so you were there fairly constantly.
Now, if you were a big enough farmer, say you had 500,000 acres at that time, it'd pay you to have a foreman, Mexican foreman, over them.
I see. But you did not have a foreman.
No, I was too little. I was the foreman and everything.
So you were supervisor.
But when we got into cotton picking, we tend to pick one out of the herd and let him be the foreman. In fact, I got the picture here. This one you were showing you. This one right here, it was the foreman of the cotton picking.
Okay.
And we never had any trouble with the weights or anything. He's the one that's a lettuce picker today.
And is this the one that you thought was Pablo Sáenz?
No. Pablo Sáenz, a different man.
That's a different guy. Okay. Do you remember this man's name?
No.
Okay.
The other one, Chungo, that one.
Okay, well, we can go back to that a little later. Did you know any of the braceros by name? I mean, at the time they were working for you.
Yeah, you knew them all by name.
You knew all of them by name. Okay.
You always just went by first name.
And you mentioned...
Most all of them, like, you're probably familiar, they use their mother's name in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
And they always will have both parents' name in their full name somewhere.
Right. Garcia y Lerma or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, like if you were a Garcia and you got married, you'd be the middle name would still be Garcia, or your last name. You could whichever way you wanted.
Okay. Does any one particular bracero stand out in your memory?
Well, it's Pablo Sáenz, the champion cotton picker.
Okay, the champion cotton picker. Maybe the foreman guy.
These all left. The trouble when you get them trained, then people will take advantage of them, hire them away from you.
Mm-hmm.
Which happens in all businesses. your top person may go to your worst enemy because they know the skill there.
Is that because the enemy lures him away?
Well, some people have philosophy, like if you got a business and you want to get to the top, well, you know your competition's got a good man over there, go hire him, get him.
Mm-hmm.
That's just American style.
It's like survival of the fittest or something like that. Okay.
Now, there's a picture one I showed you over there. He's an Indian, and he always would buy so much food to eat that he bought medicine to cure his stomach ache when he got through eating it all.
Oh my goodness.
But he was quite a character. He's one we got some rats and mice in the house, and he went out and caught him a bull snake and come in with it wrapped around his neck and turned him loose, and he said, Johnny, no more rats. That's the way they are. A lot of them have similar names, is why it's hard to remember the names. The same name. You may have 10 Jose's out there. You know.
Right. What did they do on their days off, or did they have days off?
Well, as I said, they don't work Saturday afternoon or Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Where they go and what they did was on their own. A lot of them would go to Auras.
What else did they do?
Well, visit each other. Usually you had none on the premises on the Saturday afternoon and Sunday. They vanish, and they're back on Monday morning.
Would they, like, go to the bars, or what do they do?
Most of them didn't drink too much. They had a Welcome Inn bar here. They'd go to that. It's still in existence.
Mm-hmm. What did they do for fun?
Well, a lot of them would like to pitch washers or dollars, and they'd cut a hole in the sidewalk and bet each other with that, and they just loved to do that. And we had one that he made jewelry out of silver spoons and coins.
Mm-hmm.
He could make you a beautiful ring out of a quarter just by tapping it with a spoon. And it made our spoons disappear quick, too, that we had to furnish in the labor department because they wanted to see what tablespoon, a fork, and a knife. And you had to have that. They never used them, but you had to have them.
Were they generally stainless steel, or were they?
We just bought a, I'd say stainless steel.
Uh-huh, okay.
But you'd hear a thump, thump noise when they're off. You'd be over there making a ring or something. We had a big labor house back of our place here, and they were always in there doing something like that. Sometimes you would get mean ones that would buy guns and try to shoot up the place, but as a whole, they were pretty good.
Did you give them any special privileges?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I didn't write this question.
You favor them. Yeah, you tend to pull the ones that are more efficient out and give them a more trustworthy job, we'll say.
Okay, so maybe a little bit.
That's where the two, this Chongo and Rafael, we'll call the other one there, they became my best tractor men.
Best tractor.
And that's why they left. They got so good.
Okay.
We had one of them, and we had a local man making rows, and he just couldn't do a good job. And we trained this fellow, and he could do twice the work in a day.
So it was more responsibility and probably a little bit more money.
They'd get be paid more, but they'd get to be paid more hours, too.
Okay.
That's what people don't understand. Like irrigating, why would you work a man long hours? Well, as long as he waters it right, you don't care if he sleeps on the job or what. It's doing your job.
Right. You mentioned earlier that they did get time off for holidays like the Cinco de Mayo and so on. Were those paid vacation days?
No, they were on their own.
That was on their own.
The other thing I might say is if somebody gets sick in Mexico, they want to go, and you just about got to let them go.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stand in the way, or they'll quit you.
That's like a relative?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we had one, he always was going to see his mother. I said, well, she died 5 years ago. What's going on? and tease him that it was a matter, I think, of taking flowers to her grave or something that he had to do. He had a responsibility there.
Mm. So she really had died 5 years ago.
But that wasn't the point. It was the point he wanted off to go to.
I see.
Because it's Mother's Day. We only had one in all the time I've ever had them that was really, what I'd say, interested in you getting ahead. And if he saw something out of line, he called 911, get the police in there, and took care of things. Most of them will not do that. They don't want to be involved. Today it's the same thing.
Okay. Do you happen to know what they did on their holidays? I mean, if they had like Cinco de Mayo, did they go to local celebrations or?
No, they mostly go to Mexico and Juarez.
Okay.
Now, you have asked me where the best ones came from in Mexico.
Well, I was just getting to that.
Oh, you're getting there. Most of them come from Chihuahua to Delicias, below Chihuahua, in those irrigated areas.
Delicias?
Uh-huh, down there by Boquilla Dam. I went down there one time, and they farm similar to our farming. Now, it's probably some ugly American down there calling the shots. But anyway, they'll have five or six standing at the end of the field or sitting, hoping that whoever's driving that tractor goose up and then go get his job. And they have so much labor down there. It's just, you get in third world countries, it's that way. You get down to Nicaragua down there, I've been in there, and there's just thousands of them at the side of the road, nothing to do. I don't know how they survive. It's pathetic.
I guess their economy is not quite as good as ours.
Like you mentioned, Mexico City, we'll say right now, with say 30 million people there, how do they make a living? How do they get, it just baffles me. Say Baghdad right now, where do they live on? How do they make a living?
Probably a lot of them aren't right now. Mm-hmm.
But everybody has to eat and wear clothes.
Well, that's true. We may have covered this already, but I'm going to ask it since it's on the list here. When the contract ended, say, for your cotton pickers, what did they do?
You'd have to take them to town to the Farm Bureau office and check them in. Then they'd have a bus take them to the border and release them.
All right.
It was funny, one time we had one, he did get drunk, raised cane, and go home. And so they sent him home, and he sobered up, and he got on the other side of the border. What am I doing here? He couldn't get back then. But they're real strange. Like, we used to grow lots of sheep. I say a lot. We had a sheep herd, and they're a lot. Very seldom you find anybody who likes to take care of animals. That's one of the weaknesses of the Spanish and Mexicans. But they're either real perfectionists, they don't want to do it. But say a water hut, you tell him, go water the sheep, and he'd go over and turn the faucet on, and he'd pass out and tired or something, and you'd see the water flooding, you'd go cut it off and say, why didn't you shut the faucet off? He'd wake up hearing you do it. Well, it's not running now. So the moral of the story is let them see what the problem is before you correct it.
Okay.
But they're like Germans. If they're trained in any profession, they want to do that, and they're usually very good at it. Whereas silly Americans, we think we're experts in everything, and aren't in anything,
Jack of all trades and master of none.
No.
Did any of your braceros ever, move over to help somebody else with their harvest?
Yes, we'd loan each other out. And I got in trouble one time. The farmer thought I should pay him, and he'd come to me and says, can you work
on their time off?
We'll visit each other. Usually you had none on the premises on the Saturday afternoon and Sunday. They vanish, and they're back on Monday morning.
Would they, go to the bars, or what do they do?
Most of them didn't drink too much. They had a welcome in bar here, they'd go to that. It's still in existence.
Mm-hmm. What did they do for fun?
Well, a lot of them would like to pitch washers or dollars, and they'd cut a hole in the sidewalk and bet each other with that, and they just loved to do that. And we had one that He made jewelry out of silver spoons and coins.
Mm-hmm.
You can make you a beautiful ring out of a quarter just by tapping it with a spoon. And it made our spoons disappear quick, too, that we had to furnish in the labor department because they wanted to see what tablespoon, a fork, and a knife. And you had to have that. They never used them, but you had to have them.
Were they generally stainless steel, or were they...
We just bought a... Yeah, I'd say stainless steel.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But you'd hear a thump, thump noise, and they're all... It'd be over making a ring or something. We had a big labor house back of our place here, and they were always in there doing something like that. Sometimes you would get mean ones that would buy guns and try to shoot up the place, but as a whole, they were pretty good.
Did you give them any special privileges?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I didn't write this question.
You favor them. Yeah, you tend to pull the ones that are more efficient out and give them a more trustworthy job, we'll say.
Okay, so maybe a little bit.
That's where the two, this Chongo and Rafael, we'll call the other one there, they became my best tractor men.
Best tractor.
And that's why they left. They got so good.
Okay.
We had one of them, and we had a local man making rows, and he just couldn't do a good job. And we put this, trained this fellow, and he could do twice the work in a day.
So it was more responsibility and probably a little bit more money?
They'd get be paid more, but they'd get to be paid more hours, too.
Okay.
That's what people don't understand. Like irrigating, why would you work a man long hours? Well, he as long as he waters it right, you don't care if he sleeps on the job or what. He's doing your job.
Right. You mentioned earlier that they did get time off for holidays like the Cinco de Mayo and so on. Were those paid vacation days?
No, they were on their own.
That was on their own.
The other thing I might say is if somebody gets sick in Mexico, they want to go, and you just about got to let them go. Mm-hmm. You can't stand in the way or they'll quit you.
That's like a relative?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we had one, he always was going to see his mother. I said, well, she died 5 years ago. What's going on? And teasing, but it was a matter, I think, of taking flowers to her grave or something that he had to do. He had a responsibility there.
Mm. So she really had died 5 years ago.
But that wasn't the point. It was the point he wanted off to go to.
I see.
Because it's Mother's Day or something. We only had one, and all the time I've ever had them, that was really, what I'd say, interested in you getting ahead. And if he saw something online, he called 911, get the police in there, and took care of things. Most of them will not do that. They don't want to be involved. Today it's the same thing.
Okay. Do you happen to know what they did on their holidays? I mean, if they had like Cinco de Mayo, did they go to local celebrations or?
No, they'd mostly go to Mexico and Juarez.
Okay.
Now, you have asked me where the best ones came from in Mexico.
Well, I was just getting to that.
Oh, you're getting there. Most of them come from Chihuahua to Delicias, below Chihuahua, in those irrigated areas.
Delicias?
Uh-huh. Down there by Boquilla Dam. I went down there one time, and they farm similar to our farming. Now, it's probably some ugly American down there calling the shots. But anyway, they'll have five or six standing at the end of the field or sitting, hoping that whoever's driving that tractor goose up and then go get his job. And they have so much labor down there. It's just, you get in third world countries, it's that way. You get down to Nicaragua down there, I've been in there, and there's just thousands of them at the side of the road, nothing to do. I don't know how they survive. It's pathetic.
I guess their economy is not quite as good as ours.
Well, like you mentioned, Mexico City, we'll say right now, with say 30 million people there, how do they make a living? How do they get, it just baffles me. Say Baghdad right now, where do those people, what do they live on? How do they make a living?
Probably a lot of them aren't right now. Mm-hmm.
But everybody has to eat and wear clothes.
Well, that's true. We may have covered this already, but I'm going to ask it since it's on the list here. When the contract ended, say, for your cotton pickers, what did they do?
You'd have to take them to town to the Farm Bureau office and check them in. Then they'd have a bus take them to the border and release them.
All right.
It was funny, one time we had one, he did get drunk, raised cane, and go home. And so they sent him home, and he sobered up and he got on the other side of the border. What am I doing here? He couldn't get back then. But they're real strange. Like, we used to grow lots of sheep. I say a lot. We had a sheep herd, and they're a lot. Very seldom you find anybody that likes to take care of animals. That's one of the weaknesses of the Spanish and Mexicans. But they're either real perfectionists, they don't want to do it. But say a water hut, you tell him, go water the sheep, and he'd go over and turn the faucet on, and he'd pass out and tired or something, and you'd see the water flooding, you'd go cut it off and say, why didn't you shut the faucet off? He'd wake up hearing you do it. Well, it's not running now. So the moral of the story is, let them see what the problem is before you correct it.
Okay.
But they're like Germans. If they're trained in any profession, they want to do that, and they're usually very good at it. Whereas silly Americans, we think we're experts in everything, and we aren't in anything, you know.
Jack of all trades and master of none. Did any of your braceros ever, move over to help somebody else with their harvest?
Yes, we'd loan each other out.
Okay.
And I got in trouble one time. The farmer thought I should pay him, and he'd come to me and says, can you work my braceros? I've run out of work. Doctors, I don't know.
I have the same problem occasionally. I'm going to put a little introduction on this one, too, since this is a new disc. This is Beth Morgan. It's April the 23rd, 2003. I am visiting with John Tomlin at his home near Las Cruces, New Mexico, and this interview is for the Bracero Oral History Project. And I'm going to have to get you to remind me what we were talking about.
I think it's mainly the recreation, what they did for recreation. Most of them wanted to come in and work. I can tell you the story of one that his son and him picked a whole cotton crop for us one fall. I was doing some practice teaching and over at Damming. And they had me harvested quicker than I ever had. The only thing was they wanted to be paid in silver dollars. And of course, you could get them easy. And today, I doubt if you could go down and get $300 worth of silver dollars at the bank. They laugh at you.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, they took this money and went back to Juarez and bought trucks and went into the trucking business. One of them brought a truck up and showed it to us one time. He's proud of getting ahead. Then I had one from Delicious he put in the grocery store. He got home. He liked the way our grocery stores worked here, and so he set up the same way.
Okay.
One went into the fruit business west of Chihuahua, put in apple trees. And then all of our big 5-gallon buckets he could find that we'd use for different commodities, well, he took them down there to use as smudge pots and keep the apples from getting frozen.
Okay.
Some of them were totally different than what we've been talking about. They're very high class.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd never know it looking at them. And one of my neighbors, he had one he went down to see his home in Juarez. It was the finest home, one of the finest in Juarez. He was an aristocrat just over here making money.
Hmm.
Had butler and everything else in Juarez.
Well,
so you can't judge the book by the color.
Or the cover either, for that matter. Okay, we had been talking a little bit about whether any of the any of your workers went over and helped somebody else when they were done with the work that you had hired them to
do. We tended to usually borrow the other guys. We were starting to rent more land at that time towards the end of the Becerra program, and it was hard to get enough men, and then you always had a certain percent wouldn't stay out their contract. They just leave.
Mm-hmm.
as far as their health, I only had one out of the thousands of them I probably worked that was allergic to cotton. He just broke out in a terrible rash, and they sent him back. They told him he had the option of getting silk-lined clothes like the Army uses. They have one now and then, but that's the only one I ever saw like that.
So did he do that, or did
No, he went back.
Okay. I wonder if that would work. Seems like you'd still get it on you somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Usually cotton is very sanitary, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a newspaper. If you ever have to lay somebody out for this hurt or something and you don't have sheets or anything, use newspapers. They're as sterile as anything you can get because of the ink in them. That's what a doctor told me one time. And
why is that?
Talking to skills, one of these men here, this Rafael here, he was a champion fisher. He didn't need a pole. You just get down in the drainage and throw those fish up to you as fast as can be. You could catch them like magic. Now, that's a skill.
Are there fish in
the He's
the
one that I mentioned that is today one of the professional lettuce packer. You have to pack the lettuce in the box a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And they work as a team in those lettuce crews.
I had no idea there were fish in the ditches.
Yeah, there's fish in there. We lost a lot of good ones one year. Some guy dumped some toxic waste in them, killed all the fish.
What did it do to your crops?
No, it was going on towards Texas
in the wintertime. I see. Okay. Well, there you go. That's one of the things that some of them did with their free time, I suppose. Did he ever cook up any of those fish for you?
No. We worked a few black people then. And they would fish a lot in the drainages on their time off, and that made the Mexicans watch them and want to fish too.
I see. Okay.
But the black people, they rather had the carp than the bass. There's a special way to cook carp, makes them taste good, same way the crawdads.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, because my dad, when he was fishing, he'd take the carp and cut it up for bait.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care to eat the carp. Okay, I'm kind of going back to my list here. What were your obligations to the workers at the end of the work contract?
To see that they were checked in properly.
And that would have been through the Farm Bureau?
Yeah.
Okay. And did you have any understanding with them that you would rehire them if they came to work again? Or?
Yes, we'd like to get the same crew back. If we could. They worked for me this year, I said, can you come back next year? And they would write letters, and we'd correspond with them.
But that was not required.
Oh, no, this is personal. This is on the side.
You did that on your own, okay.
As far as the government helping you there, they would, you know, a man's a man. But usually they kind of stayed in the background and let our people that we had in Farm Bureau do the selecting and handling it.
Who stayed in the background?
The U.S. Department of Labor.
Oh, I see. Okay. What was the procedure for extending or renewing a contract?
They were only allowed so many months or years in the country, as I vaguely recall, and they could use that up. But it was just an extension thing. Now, I remember one. He had to go back, as well as all of them. He stayed so long, he had to go back to Mexico for 30 days or something. And then he could be renewed.
Uh-huh.
And he come back, and he's riding in the bus up there, and he looked at his girlfriend was driving his truck with somebody else in it, a different man. And so when he got home then, after checking out, well, he took my tractor and rammed the car as she'd been. And I said, well, you hurt my tractor and hurt the car. No, but I had to teach the lady a lesson. Don't step out on me. But they're strange people. They
didn't like that.
They learned all the ropes, what they can do and what they can't do, like I guess anybody would.
So did you have braceros that came to work for you every year?
Yeah.
The same ones?
Mm-hmm.
And how many years would you say you had one the longest?
Well, you must realize we legalized them then when the Becerra program quit.
Right.
And I have one that's, he's just retired. And I guess from, oh, say, 48 straight on through.
So he's still
been employed, yeah.
Worked for you, yeah, until they, he retired.
A good employee, if you can get them, you about got to buy the business to get them. They're not going to quit. A good worker doesn't come and knock on the door for work. He has work unless something happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the hard one, is where do you get good help? Mm-hmm. You can't go to the employment office. They don't know. They're different. They're just in there stalling in most cases. But some of them were real good at the beginning of wetbacks, and they came in and worked for you, and then they say, well, if you have any wetbacks, bring them down, and we'll give them passes.
Well, that was after the Becerra program.
No, it was during the Becerra program, at the beginning.
Okay.
And that way you knew they'd work. Mm-hmm. Because you take a wand down there that could irrigate perfect and not leave a dry spot and not flood you out. You wanted him. You will with any worker. You know, you got good and bad. I don't care whether they're PhDs or ditch diggers.
So would you say that there were several that you had worked for you for more than a year?
Or? Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. So you kind of got to know them and you wanted the same ones.
Yeah, we tend, like, if you had a good crew to pick cotton, we want to get them back. We could. I know we had five brothers one time, and they were excellent. We got them back. And then we used to get a lot of them. There were pickle pickers that worked in Michigan and states like that. And you get to knowing them, and then they get through up there, it's just time perfect to go to work here in the cotton. And I had one of them was a champion picker, and they'd give a new Stetson hat if he could win. He got scared and went in her. Too bashful.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Why he was bashful?
Well, or the contest?
No, they different stores that donate things. And they donate, say, $100 Stetson hat. Today it's probably $400 hat.
Uh-huh.
And whoever's the champion, he got that hat, and then he had, you know, down to maybe the fifth place. And they'd have it on somebody's farm.
What did the contest consist of?
Just picking the cotton. Who could pick the most in an hour, we'll say.
I see. Okay. You mentioned a little earlier this gentleman who borrowed your tractor to ram his girlfriend's vehicle with. Did you have any other problems with Braceros?
Well, some of them have more, several wives, and that was a problem. They're going, wanting to go and send money orders and didn't have enough money, and I guess human factors that were, they didn't have anything to do with the work.
Right.
Their private lives, is what I guess you'd call it.
Several wives, huh?
Uh-huh.
Is that legal in Mexico?
Well, I don't know. Is it legal here? They probably do.
Maybe they were Mormon braceros, huh?
There's a lot of Mormons in Mexico. There's a lot of black Mexicans, too. There's a big area in Juarez that's all black. We used to use them chili picking, and they're real good workers.
Hmm.
But a lot of them would go to the Roswell area where they, right now, even in, because they have good facilities to keep them, and they like to not have to go home at night, have a bed there.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I never understood is a lot of those legalizing warriors, why won't they live up here? What's the advantage? Food's cheaper in some cases, but you know, all the bother and getting up early and catching the bus and all that. You know, they'll go out at 2 in the morning and finally get on the bus they want to come up here on to work with the day crew chief. And they it looks like it'd be more profitable to live up here.
Well, it might be, but I guess maybe not everybody wants to be an American.
Well, you go out to L.A. and say, how far do you live from work? And they say, oh, 50 minutes. Everything's in minutes, you know, not miles.
Well, I guess it's probably about the same, maybe a little bit longer, depending on where the farm is from Juarez to here. There were some breast arrows that wanted to shoot up the blaze.
Well, you always have that. We had one time, and we had a big crew, and it rained, and one of them slipped out of the house, come over and say, "Oh, Johnny, there, so-and-so, Jose bought a pistol, and he's shooting it at everybody, shot all the lights out of the house and all that." So I call the sheriff's office, and I said, "You come and pick this man up. He's going to hurt somebody." They were too scared to come out, so I thought, well, I was young and frisky and veteran and all that, so I went over, took a rifle away from him. He come right at me, and I said, "Well, you know, it's got a bullet in it, so don't come any farther," and he stopped. So then we called him, the police, the sheriff, and they come and got him and sent him back to Mexico. But that was the only one that I ever had that was a direct contact with his gun. And I said to the police, "What are you going to do with that rifle?" I never saw it was a rifle, not a pistol. And I never saw one that was so accurate when he shot it. It just seemed like it hit everything you pointed it at. And they said, "You can keep it." So I gave it to my son, and in later years, somebody stole it. So I don't know where it maybe went back to Mexico or something.
That's kind of interesting.
There's lots of stories, but they'd probably have to be too vulgar to print, you know.
So would you say that particular gentleman was drunk?
And yeah.
Okay.
Just kind of went insane. You'll have that. We had one other one time. They always get mean in rainstorms because they can't work in storms. And he shot the lights out of the house. They tend to want to shoot the lights out. They're drunk. Mm-hmm. And he was with a crew of about five that were real good pickers too. But the ones that were pickle pickers, they had a great big old green pickle on pinned on them from Michigan.
Did you ever have any other criminal behavior from any of your breast arrows?
Sometimes you'd get drunk or something, be put up in the jail, and you'd never know about it. And they'd never tell you, you know. They say, "Oh, Mama's sick, I'd take care of her." They were in your jail there.
So they might have been like absent from work for a few days
until
they let them out or something. Okay.
But usually they're real hustlers. I had one time, it was what we call a bread eater. You don't need anything but bread, no meat. But, and I don't know what he was really a vegetarian. But anyway, he ran everywhere too. He was way down below Mexico City. He's a big guy, about 6'3". And when he hit with a hole, well, there's no weed left, you know, with him. But anyway, it started raining, and I was downtown, and I thought, well, he surely has sense enough to quit working. And I came home, and he's hoeing weeds on the side of the road in the rain. It's just pouring down rain. He had a yellow raincoat. I didn't know he had a raincoat. And his hoe was just a big round ball of mud, but he was at it.
What were the... Did the breast arrows ever complain to you about the living conditions?
No, they never had that good of living conditions in most cases.
What about their wages?
No problem there. Except when I say that you missed an hour, you misfigured my weight on, and you better check it over. We had one time, and you could say 150, and he'd add it in his head and give you a total. It's like a machine. How'd he do it? I studied that man, but never figured out how smart he was, you know, how he got to be that way.
Some people just have talents.
Well, I had a friend that was going to be governor, and he went to California, took a course on gesture reading, and he could tell where they were lying and all that, you know.
Interesting.
It'd be quite worthwhile. Then I had a friend, he could tell everything. We come find out he was a lip reader after he died. He could read your lips. Mm-hmm. But anyone, way the back to the man that hoed with the mud when it rained, he just suddenly, after that, a week or two, disappeared, never came back. He got his check and it's gone. We still have that. You'll pay a guy or woman and they vanish. And then they'll file charges on you now and say, "Well, you fired me." I didn't fire him. In the Labor Department, say, "Well, you have evidence you gave them a warning, you're going to fire them." I said, "I didn't fire them." They won't take your word, they'll take the worker's word. They just let it fly, don't get hung up on it, just agree.
Okay.
But one thing, you know, is the respect of the employer. The respected one was the one that was well-dressed, clean, and put up a good appearance so they could be proud of that employer.
Did the braceros or any of your braceros ever have a strike or a labor protest in this area?
Yes, we had one time. I got a full crew to pick this field. And I went over and they'd quit. They're all just sitting around. We don't work here. No good. Work no good. There was one guy, they call him the Arab, and he'd been an instigator. So they all quit. There was nothing we can do. We got the labor department, came out to the farm and talked to them, and our people from the association, they said, well, we'll just deport them all. And we couldn't get a refund on that. And that's one reason you start not liking to work them.
What was their problem?
Just this instigator had stirred him up. I think he wanted to go home, and he thought he'd have some fun, and they listened to him.
Okay.
But it's kind of embarrassing to have that happen.
Do you happen to remember what year that was?
Oh, it'd been there towards the end, about 63. They were beginning, too, to get it to where if you hired one, if he couldn't make the minimum wage, you'd have to pay the difference. And with the cotton picker coming, it was so much more efficient than a man picking it off the stalk. What sold us on the picker, we were picking the Pima cotton, the extra long staple cotton. They were paid about $4 a hundred to pick it, which is a lot of money. Well, they brought the new machine out, and they said, "Where do you want to try it?" I said, "Let's go over there where they just got through picking the Pima." And we'd get almost as much as they had gotten on a row, they'd left.
Hmm.
And the other disadvantage of them is, say you had 40 of them or 50 of them running across the field picking, they want to stay in line, move accordingly. Well, one of them will just miss picking to keep in touch, keep in stride with the rest of them.
Huh.
They like to work in groups.
That's interesting.
It's hard to get them to spread out, and you're hoeing a field. They all want to just stay together. And they don't want to spread out. And it's kind of a bad thing that it takes a real good foreman to get them to where they'll break up and go their route and not buddy up with everybody else.
Is that because they like to visit while they're
working?
Yeah,
I think so. And it's just to get to the boss.
Just to get.
That's why in a labor union they usually have four workers and one boss.
Mm-hmm.
And like I worked for this farm for this guy who's a big contractor out in Dallas, McKee Construction, and he was always telling about how much better a union was. He wanted a brick wall laid, he'd hire them, and it was perfect. You pick somebody up on the street, they don't know really what they're doing, you get shabby work, and that was why he liked unions.
Hmm.
He got professional work, because that supervisor watches them. But the disadvantage of the union, like if you go to hire somebody, like when I was involved with the state and in agriculture, you have to be sure that you have their union spokesman there or you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And one time we were going to hire a new assistant for a county when I was on this committee a few years ago, and they said, "Oh, we got, this is going to be simple. You go on home. You need to get home." And, well, they interviewed the guy and didn't hire him, and then they all had to go to court. The labor union sued them because they didn't have their spokesman there. And I didn't have to go because they let me go that day. I lucked out.
Hmm. Interesting.
But the civil rights training is quite interesting. But you cannot use the word wetback in reference like you're in civil rights. It's bad. But here, they don't know really that that's what we call a person that didn't have documentation. Becerro or whatever, he had to have some evidence, like we do in our office here. Where today, most of them, we'll take make a copy of all their cards and whatnot, and driver's license, and have a permanent record that way.
Okay.
You did have, after when he shifted into Social Security, if I'm trying to use each other's numbers, and then the government to catch up with it, and one of them had three numbers, and they caught up with him. And they said, "Well, he had a big family. We got him a good job now. He won't have to use the other two."
Interesting. Okay. Did you ever have a situation where you had both braceros and undocumented workers at the same time?
Oh, I'm sure we did. That they don't hold it against each other.
They don't.
No, they protect each other. Huh. If he has a falsified card, they're not going to tell you. In Mexico, it's strange. You might be riding a bus down in Mexico, and if they have a wreck, the driver runs away and leaves it.
Hmm.
It's a strange philosophy they have. We had a wreck out in front of our house one time. The road was wet. I went to look at it, and it turned upside down, the car, all full of braceros. And I called it in. When they got there, nobody's left but the driver that owned the car, and the rest fled.
Hmm. Maybe they were non-braceros. Maybe they were undocumented.
It could have been wetbacks.
Yeah.
Most places, though, the only one to bother the wetback was the immigration officer. And there was a big dairy up the road. And it was real funny. They knew this border patrolman, a real fine fella, and he went to their farm to look for Juan or whoever it was that's supposed to have been there. And he couldn't find him. And after he left, they were all laughing. And I said, what was wrong? Juan was up in the tree hiding above the immigration officer.
So they had their ways of dealing
with
La Migra.
I know one immigration officer say, what bothers me is my mother lives over here by Arizona, and she's always feeding the wetbacks. And I have to pick them up. But she won't let anybody go hungry.
So... you would say then that the braceros and the undocumented workers got along pretty well.
Uh-huh. Well, the thing about the Mexicans, just like I mentioned, when the president opened the border and let them come over free and get the crop out, was it just showed how that the farmers had to have them. We hadn't mechanized enough yet, and we had to have them to get the crops in. But the farmers all were making a living. Today, they're all going broke. It's just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
There's a boy across the river the other day. He had farming his grandfather's farm, and he just had to shut her down. Banks cut him off, put all his equipment to sale. He just sold for nothing. It's terrible. You probably had, you didn't have chemicals either for weed control like today. And so they filled in the part. The short hoe came after the Becerra program.
Short hoe?
Yeah, they see it's illegal now. If you give a hoe to a man, if it doesn't have a 4-foot handle on it, you could be sent to penitentiary. That's a real hefty fine. Because it might give him back injury. It's okay for you to work in the garden with a short hoe, but not to hire somebody.
I see. Okay. In general, what would you say was the quality of the work that the braceros did for you?
They did real good work. I think the reason for it, as I told you the other day, I think they had a much higher IQ. You'd go to the unemployment here, you'd get some guy that was mentally deranged or drug addict or something that didn't care. All he wants the money. These fellas wanted to please you. Especially if they knew, like they were wet, and they knew they had a program, you could get them legalized to get them a card to work. They respected it. The only thing, well, like some of these that I showed in pictures, once they'd worked so long for you, they felt the responsibility was over, so they would leave. And there's no way you could keep them. And I guess with workers, if they want to leave you, you just well let them go.
Mm-hmm.
We have that with landlords too. They get mad at you farming over nothing. You better, you're not appreciated, go. Same with any job. If you're not appreciated in, say, 3 years, you better look elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what percentage of Social Security that those that are legalized halfway is going to Mexico now, but I know a lot of it is. America is. Takes care of the foreigners sometimes better than the locals. We find that in churches too, missionary work. There are people starving in the country, and yet it's going to some place that a whole lot of other money's coming in.
Hmm.
They all like to get Singer sewing machines. You can tell they're getting ready to leave too. They had to take a Singer sewing machine home. They'd pay high money for that.
Did you ever, well, you said that they didn't bring their families, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Would you have any way of comparing the quality of work that the Braceros did to, say, the work of...
The locals?
Joe Blow off the street here, yeah, the locals.
There wasn't any comparison.
There weren't any locals.
You had no workers, locals to work.
Okay. And why was that?
I don't know. Why is it today that we don't have...
Too, right?
I haven't seen an Anglo come here and want work in a long, long time. I don't know what's happened in the United States. Why don't they want to work on the farm? Like one of the Spanish people said, my father has such a hard time. I says, look, he's making more money than my daughter is teaching school at Hatch. You think he's just a peon and all that? He's highly paid, making good money.
As a farm worker?
As a farm worker. Make $25,000 or so a year. That's nothing to laugh at.
Mm-hmm.
But they still didn't see it that way. And most of the ones that were processed, their children didn't stay on the farm. They got as far away from them as they could because they consider it peon work, as they call it. Mm. And then some of them, you'd ask them, what's your father doing? He's a peon. He's just a low on the totem pole. And it's hard to take because here I know one family had an old boy. He was so smart. He was one of the top scientists of White Sands. And then the folks were poor as church mice. And it shows America is it can get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ones that's a Becerro that's retired from me, I didn't sponsor him to legalize, but someone else did. He had a son a few years ago that took civil engineering out here in New Mexico State. He got through in 2.5 years. His first job, $62,000 in New Jersey. And that's what I say, that's the quality of people we work on a farm, of those kind of brain cells. And there's a lot of them that way. There was one of our county agents said, what's your father do? Oh, he come in as a wetback. Got to be in the Mexican National. And,
mm-hmm.
and he retired here a while back as county agent.
Do you have any idea why these people were so smart or... What attracted
they
smart
had
people
had
to farm?
They had not had any opportunity to show it, I think.
Mm.
But I know some of them when I was in the Army come into Fort Bliss. They had a program, they teach them English in 2 weeks, civil, similar to Peace Corps, and they learned it, and they come back real decorated and everything, and they offered a lot of them citizenship. I don't know how many took it. One of them I got to know real well, and he went to New Mexico State. And I said, what are you going to do? He said, I guess I'll have to go back and be a bullfighter. That's where the money is.
Was he one of the educated ones?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
They make good soldiers, a lot of them. They'll do their job.
Did you notice any animosity between the Braceros and other farm employees?
No, we did with local Spanish Mexican people. They didn't like them because they got a lot of favors they thought they weren't entitled to, but the argument is why didn't they get out and do it? But a lot of times we're criticized on the farm for stoop labor, and like I mentioned, a lot of that time you add up what they got in a year, they did pretty good. It's not a cheap stoop labor. They're rewarded well. One thing helps them is they can put in more hours and make more money.
Would you say that's now or during the Bracero program?
Always with them.
Always? Okay.
It helped Mexico too. By having these guys come in, they took the ideas, a lot of it, back to Mexico, like to Delicias and down there by Boquilla and those Chihuahua, the farming techniques.
Uh-huh. Okay. In your opinion, were there other advantages and or disadvantages to the Bracero program?
the disadvantage was having to comply with the U.S. Department of Labor's requirements. Abnormal high ceilings, too much heat for the house for a lot of men, and just too restrictive.
Mm-hmm. And what were the advantages?
Labor.
Just having the labor.
Yeah. You get the crop harvested.
Okay.
Of course, cotton was worth a lot more, too. The farmer made a lot more profit per acre than he does today. I've got a back sheet from the university here now, and there's just some of these crops, there's no money in it. Like this wheat we're growing out here, they only make $11 an acre profit. It's terrible. And the cotton, they say you'll lose $100 an acre growing it. Costs you 62 cents to grow it, and you sell it for 48 cents, you know. And it worked pretty good. And like the guy that he bought cantaloupes and sold them for a price he paid for them, didn't make any money. And his brother said, well, we should have bought a bigger truck and got a bigger load. A lot of them makes money.
I guess. What would you say led to the fact that the program ended?
Restrictions from the federal government.
Okay.
It might have been an indirect thing from unions, you can't ever tell. But we had no Cesar Chavez activity in this state that I knew of.
Okay, or anything like that?
We had on local crews, there was one that had been probably in the 70s that they objected to children sitting out in the field with onion harvesters. And the ones that objected were the Department of Labor in New Mexico that were out there rioting. And we got that all corrected. Today, just to give you an example of how severe U.S. Department of Labor is, they say that a worker should have an hour off for lunch, regardless if he wants it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hire a labor crew and they don't let them in piecework, even picking chili, if you don't give them an hour off to rest, you're subject to about a $2,000 starting fine, which I have paid. And I hired a crew for an example. And I didn't pay any attention. It's piecework. And I just pay the crew chief. He come in, want pay, and I pay him. Well, they watched the place for 5 days, the labor people with binoculars way off, and they saw these crew weren't taking a full hour. Well, why should they take a full hour? They're on their own. We're not nursemaiding them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how government rules can get to be so out of line.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you like to see the Bracero program or something like it reinstated?
Well, it probably will have to come eventually, but how do you get it to where it's not one-sided with regulations against you? You see, there's no way that the farmer, the rancher, could file against the worker for poor work or let him go for poor work. You're going to have it. And the same thing, all the protection is against the employer.
Okay.
There's nothing that the worker has to sign and say, oh, we'll abide by this and this. That's the disadvantage.
And if it weren't reinstated, would you want something like that?
I think it'd be good. We need new blood in the system. We'll run out of it.
Uh-huh.
Just like these old men now that were brought in that halfway naturalized, most of them never caught naturalized, but they're dying off.
Uh-huh.
Who's going to replace them? And your average person won't come out from the town and work. We used to get football players in the summer. No, they don't do that. They'd rather walk a treadmill. And then a lot of them used to haul ice out for refrigerators. But no, you don't have anybody wanting to work. And I don't think you want to force them to work on the farm. They won't do good. They'd be like the German prisoner. He might take him on all day. He had so much he had to work. And they'd keep him after dark till they picked enough cotton to qualify. Say they picked only 100 pounds. They had to pick 125. It was kind of hard on them. They were nice, young-looking boys, men, but yet they weren't. They didn't want to work. They didn't have the know-how.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an old buddy, he was from Pennsylvania, engineer, and he'd come out in his motorcycle, I'd like to try picking that cotton. You know, that rascal could pick more than anybody ever saw. His hands just like lightning.
Wow.
He had skill.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. There was an old woman down the road here, and she'd go out in the afternoon and pick 400 pounds of cotton. I said, why do you do it? I just love to pick it.
Interesting.
Just a skill. Fast.
Interesting. Well, Mr. Tomlin, this is about all the questions I have for you. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think it made a living for the small grocers and mercantile people in the area. Today, we're tending to drift away from that with mass, gigantic people like Walmart and Sam's that are they're in there, and people are times are hard, so they go for the cheaper price. Where before you had the little groceries and these Mexican cereals, that's where they want to trade. They wouldn't like to go in a big store.
Right.
So it helped out that little store, and it gave them a livelihood too, along with the farming.
Right. Is there anyone that you think I should interview in particular that you can think of?
I don't know, they've all died off, I think.
Is Mr. Bigby, is he still around?
Who?
Mr. Bigby?
He's a rancher, he didn't use them.
He did not?
No, he's not from here. The hatch area, you getting up in there?
Yeah. Anyone up there you think I should
Most of them have quit. When I was starting to farm, I couldn't rent land or anything. They said, oh, you're young. You went to college to learn how to farm? I didn't have to go to college to learn how to farm. So it made us kind of have a hard time of farming and getting ahead as young people. But today, the trend's changed. And you've got a lot more younger people in agriculture due to the mechanization, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And your new chemicals like your cotton is... It got plugged into it, a gene to make it yield more and make, keep the insects off of it. And the only disadvantage is China and these foreign countries are getting it and flooding the market with more supplies. And then agriculture is bad. 20 years ago or so, you could go buy the best pickup for $3,400. Now it's $34,000, the similar truck. And you're selling cotton cheaper, like Pima, which sells for about 83 cents. We got $1.20 then. And we grew a lot of Pima cotton, long staple, mainly goes into thread industry. But things just change, and I don't see how the American farmer can succeed unless he's just in some other business and using it as a write-off for taxes, because you can't farm and keep losing. And we're having this problem now. We have probably the most elaborate onion equipment out here to grade onions and all that, but if we don't get enough price, we sell to Walmart too, but the only thing there, we have to ship in their box. It's a green, beautiful box that folds together flat to ship, and then fill it with the onions and ship it to their terminal. Well, they won't go to Las Lunas, they want it shipped to Houston. And so most all that goes there. And in that box, we have to pay $1.35, and we could buy a pasteboard one for $1.25.
Mm-hmm.
But to sell to them, Dow Pineapple's the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Only they use a paper box. They sand, and there's several of these big outfits you'll think are good this year. Next year, they may be bankrupt. What's hurt us is a lot of the people that we ship to bellied up, and they need to have protection for that's where the government should do, I think. And having been a legislator, we need some kind of legislation where they protect the grower when he ships the vegetables that he should be compensated for. Now, if you ship a cow from here to Kansas City and they don't pay for it, they're taking the court, or there's some way they have to pay you first. And it ought to be that way on the vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And then being a trained state with Santa Fe giving so much land in New Mexico, they ought to be required to haul our produce in refrigerated cars. They are in Arizona and California. It's hard to compete with that. But with the cars, they have these gigantic semi-trailers, and they back them up to your shed, and you fill them up. They take them, put them on piggyback on their train. They're fully guaranteed. If anything goes wrong, you're compensated. Whereas a trucker pulls in here, that's his business. He can't pay for the load if he loses it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of little things that need working out to get agriculture back on the track, but I don't know what's going to happen, because there's not enough of them, none of the votes to scare the congressional people.
I guess time will tell. Huh?
Fuel is what's killing us too. What you had back in the Becerra days, you had cheap fuel. We put in a diesel well out here in '50s, and that thing burns 3 gallons of gas, diesel an hour, which was about 33 cents an hour. Today we pay $1.80 about for delivered diesel. They charge more to bring it to the farm than they do at the pump downtown. Huh. It used to be the reverse when I went to college. Well, I had a tank brought out and put my gas in it, and I saved a lot of money that way. Today you can't do it. Mm-hmm. Like you go into Sam's to buy something and see the dog food, it's so much a case. You go over to Walmart and it's cheaper individual cans. And you say, why? Oh, that's convenience. That's no convenience to pay more money. There's some things you can do all right in there. But
have to watch it, huh?
Yeah. You need to know what it's all about with the prices, the competition. But the dog food, the Walmart's the cheapest there is in the name brands.
Well, Mr. Tomlin, I appreciate your time. I'm going to turn this off right now.